From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk old words, 200-year-old words, as we celebrate our 200th show. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Well, hello you two. Happy, I guess I can't say anniversary because it's not really an anniversary, and besides people will get mad at me for using that anyway. It's not really our birthday. But it is our 200th episode today.
Yay!
Yay!
It seems kind of crazy that we've been doing this for that long. But, you know, this is a pretty cool milestone. So congratulations to all of us, I think.
Yeah, yeah. We still aren't shutting up, you know? There's a lot to say.
And, you know, thanks to everybody who's been listening, you know, even for a week or since the very beginning. And for sending in all of your questions and for talking to us about crazy language issues. It's a lot of fun, definitely for us, and we're really glad that it's been so much fun for you too. And with that said,
we're going to go back to olden times to begin with.
Olden times.
And that's an email from a listener named Erica, who said, this was really an interesting question. Anyway, she didn't say that. I just did. That was me. She said, I used the phrase olden times recently and started thinking about it. I've never heard or used olden outside of olden times, olden days. I didn't get much etymology out of Google except for its AI confirming that olden is archaic outside of this usage. Thank you, yeah. AI. So I thought I'd put my queries to the experts over the computer overlords. What is the history of this term and why did it fall out of use except in this one case? Hopes it makes it on the show. It did, Erica. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, it made it on the show pretty quickly, too. And here's why. We really got interested in this because it actually has more ramifications than we would have thought. First of all, let's start with the en suffix, as in olden. That's like a typical old English suffix, olden, wooden, oaken, etc. So we thought this is just the sort of run-of-the-mill en suffix that is now declining dramatically, incidentally. I mean, we don't really say, I wouldn't say like oaken. And I mean, would you say oaken ever, Fletcher?
And no. If I were talking about a cask, I would. An oaken cask.
Oaken cask. Yeah, you might.
Yeah, that's or pretty much it.
Or Thorin oaken shield.
Actually, yeah, oaken and cask. Yeah, oaken, yeah, Thorin oaken shield. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, it has like that sort of like oldie feeling. And sure enough, it basically began fading very early, like by Middle English, people didn't really say it. We don't really say, I think we say golden.
Golden would be what we would say. I mean, say. Wooden. We wooden. Certainly still wooden. Say wooden. Yeah.
But we wouldn't say too many others. I don't think we would say
woolen.
Woolen. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say a woolen sweater.
I would say wool. Even the woolen, you hear woolen, but I would say wool.
They basically began, they were all over the place and they faded. Mm-hmm. And then interestingly enough, they faded in about the 14 or 1500s. But interestingly enough, at the same time, en was added to verbs, as in like moisten or darken. Oh. It was added to nouns or adjectives to make verbs.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I was not
moisten,
talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, moisten or darken. So the first question is like, what happened here? Why did the en for like, you know, to make things, basically en meant either made of or having the aspect of. So why did that en fade? We have no idea.
It doesn't seem super necessary, really, mm-hmm. right? I mean, having the aspect of being old, you could just say old, right? You don't
right.
need to say old.
That's mm-hmm. true.
Exactly. I agree.
That's a good point. Okay, but here's the kicker in the whole thing. Olden is a special case, we think.
Oh.
This is really weird because olden doesn't seem that old.
Oh, really?
Olden seems to have come into use about the 1400s.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Just when all the other ENs were going away, olden shoots in.
Oh, crazy.
Which is really weird, isn't it?
I want to throw in here, because I thought Ross found this, and I thought it was interesting. Shakespeare only used it once, olden. Huh. And you'd think at least if olden was being used, Shakespeare, you know?
Yeah.
And if you look at the OED, even with the 1400s ones, it seems to be used in sort of the same sense that we use it today, kind of like a archaizing, making it look old, soundy oldy.
Oh,
there was a pet shop. There was a pet shop in New Jersey where we lived, as ye olde pet shoppy. Remember that
thing? Oh, yeah, I do. I loved that. And I never quite understood why the silly pet shop had to be ye olde.
I didn't either, but they had it. And of course, it wasn't ye. They said ye, but it really should be thee, but you know, we won't go there. But it became popular. It was very sporadic and not very common, even after it was coined in the 1400s. And our guess is that it was coined basically to look old.
Yeah.
And then it kicked into major usage in the early 1800s. Sir Walter Scott and Lord Byron had it to a romantic, archaic, sort of old-timey feel.
Fascinating.
Isn't it?
It's just, we wouldn't have, to be honest with you, and Erica, thank you for writing, because we initially you looked at it and you go, oh, this is going to be easy.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's like, ooh.
I know.
But isn't that so often the case in English? You start and you go, wow. You know, there's a lot more here than meets the olden eye.
Yes.
Well, but speaking of olden things.
200th episode,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, keeping that concept of 200 in mind, it's difficult. We, Fletcher, are going to have a quiz.
Oh, yay. 200 question quiz.
Yeah, that's true. 200 questions, and each of them has 200 multiple choice possibilities.
Strap in, everybody.
All right. We're going to ask you which of these words or phrases is from roughly 200 years ago.
Oh, great.
And which are not.
Yeah. Which are from any other period in time.
Pretty much.
Okay, so we're looking back to what, around 1825?
Yeah, but
roughly.
We're roughly.
Yeah, we're going to
plus or minus 10 or 15 or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to give you extra credit if you can figure out the century or decade of those that are not.
I don't think she gets
20 or so.
She gets century extra credit or decade extra. Well, we're going to start with Kathy as being highfalutin.
Yeah, great. Highfalutin. So I need to decide whether that's from around 200 years ago or not.
Right.
Highfalutin sounds more like either the late 19th century or even the early 20th century. So I'm going to say not from 200 years ago.
And Fletcher?
You're wrong.
Really? Really? This is from right around then. Well, what does it mean to be falutin in the first place?
Well, there's one thought that no one's sure, but it's probably U.S. slang, and it probably means high-flying or high-flown.
Oh, really?
Someone said, one of the etymologists said it could be high, it could be fluting. But I don't quite get where that would come from.
I used to always say do this wrong. I thought it was high faulting. I always did.
You did? I just so amazing. Talk about deja vu. I have a not a deja vu, but a real memory of you say high faulting.
I used to always say that, and I used to correct people when they said highfalutin.
Oh, wow.
You
did,
it's
Kathy.
A different word.
You did, Kathy, and I thought it was high-faulting as a kid because of you, I think.
Well, I always had a lot of confidence in my mistakes.
Well, I have two questions about highfalutin. One is it highfalutin with an N on the end, or is it highfalutin with a G on the end?
It's N. Falutin.
Okay. And my other question is, does falutin exist anywhere else besides highfalutin?
No.
No.
Wow.
It's so weird.
Yeah, I really would like to know how that started.
Well, we looked it up. We cannot find any real reference to it, you know, in terms of where it came from, beyond what I just told you.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They said it in the spirit of the times in 1839, and other people said it could be flighting. But we said highfalutin.
Which doesn't make any sense to me. I thought highfalting sounded better.
I think you're right.
Okay. Word number two is bimbo.
Bimbo cannot possibly be from 200 years ago. Bimbo does sound like the 20th century word, definitely.
Fletcher.
I am just...
Actually, though, in fairness to bimbo, it first appeared, I love the word bimbo. There's a laundry detergent for sale here called Bimbo.
European bimbo. Yeah. I've seen that. I remember that.
I always want to buy bimbo just to have the box. It first appeared in the 1830s, but it was the name of an alcoholic punch that they believe came from the word bumbo.
I'm Bembouse, too.
So that's when that word appeared, like mm-hmm. those letters in that order. But when did it start taking on the meaning that it has now or that it used to have? People don't really even say
this
bimbo
is where you come.
Anymore.
Okay, the early 1920s.
Okay, yes. See, that's exactly what I would have said.
I like that. We have a little quote here from the, 1919. It was in a column. "No bimbo can lick me," he said breathlessly at the finish. "What's a bimbo?" somebody asked Tiny Maxwell, on the assumption that Tiny ought to be familiar with the Philadelphia lingo. "A bimbo," said Tiny, "is 2 degrees lower than a cootie." There we go.
This is wow. Damon Runyon, guys. Wow. He's my favorite. Damon Runyon can write like nobody else. I'm sorry. He's a genius. He really is.
Okay, moving right along. We have, now we're going from bimbo to a very different kind of word, remediation.
Wow.
Now we're talking. That's a leap here.
Remediation. Now why in the world would you have come up with the word remediation unless it actually is from about 200 years ago? So this time I will say yes, it is.
Fletcher, you are truly a man who does not need remediation. You're correct.
What was going on right then?
Well, here, I mean, there's a clue that we're going to give away here, unfortunately, but it comes from the Latin remediare mm-hmm. and from, you know, remedium, which is a cure remedy. So one clue might be it has a Latin base, and we've learned a lot in the past 200 episodes that people loved Latin in the late 1700s and 1800s. Mm-hmm. They loved chucking in Latin words, and remediation is one. But it became really big in like education in the 60s, and then in pollution, you know, in the 80s too.
In the 20th century, yeah.
Yeah.
Remediate the verb. Do we know when was that from, Ross? Do we know?
Wow, Catherine, you brought up something very interesting. Remediate is a new verb. 1961 is one of the earliest usages.
It's back formation. Okay.
Brilliant.
Wow.
Okay. I was curious.
That was a really good question because the older verb they used to use was remedy.
Oh,
which
wow.
makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So when you remedied something, it was a remediation, but then then that backformed into the verb remediate, which didn't come around till the mid 20th century.
Yeah.
Which now that we're saying it seems so silly because remedy is so much cleaner than remediate, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. It's a lot cleaner.
Yeah.
And then now that I think about it, reading old sort of like, you know, 1800s English books, that they would remedy this.
Yeah.
The remedy the situation. We must remedy the situation, Mr. Darcy. You know, that sort of thing. Definitely.
The next word is sanitize.
Sanitize. Okay. Sanitize. Oh, interesting. I've never really thought about that word before.
It's actually not one of those words you think about often, unless you're like, you know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you do.
I don't.
You certainly, I don't want to go to your house the next time.
Hey, I like to be clean without, like, you know.
Well, but okay, is it related to making something sane, though? Sanity? Is it related to the word sanity?
That's a sane statement.
I mean, I don't think sanitize is 200 years ago, unless it didn't quite mean the same thing that it does now.
Fletcher, you are wrong and wrong on this one.
Magnificent.
Sanitize comes from the early 1800s.
Huh.
And implied in treating it from the sense sanitary plus I-Z-E. And I mean, just looking right here quickly, 1817, sanitized according to the manufacturer, etc. Formulary for preparation of medical administration.
Okay.
Sanitized,
It came from the Latin sanus, meaning healthy or sane.
Okay.
So.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So Fletcher is right on that part. The sane part is correct.
All right. The next word is customize. There's a
customize.
Theme here.
Yes, there's all these I's words coming in here. Interesting. Well, then you're probably trying to trick me here, but I'll stick with the theme. Yes, this one is also from 200 years ago when you customize.
No.
It's not, yes.
No. It was a trick. Now, we have it as entering to make customize, meaning to make something to specifications of a customer. Mm-hmm. That's the customize. 1934, it became widely used in American English.
Okay. Now, is that because things basically had to be customized a fair bit before that? I mean, like, there weren't, like, mass productions of anything?
Yeah, I think it's the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. In the old days, everything was customized.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Now you've got, you know, Ford with his assembly line and,
right,
you know, that's expanding into other things.
Yeah, and once everything was mass produced, then it was like, you know, ooh, we're going to make it just for you, though.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting.
Let's whip through a few more of these guys before we move on to other words here. But okay, Fletcher, synthesize, old or new?
New.
No, old. Rationalize, Fletcher.
Have I told
rationalize.
You how bad at coin flips I am? Rationalize is new.
No, old.
Well, actually, rationalize, Ross, I had rationalization.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, rationalize is even older, though. 1770, yes. 1767. Okay. But one interesting thing I think we should talk about quickly, the I-Z-E ending is interesting. We have, like, basically customized from the 60s or something, 30s. And then we have rationalized from the 1760s. The I-Z-E ending is a useful, productive, linguists would call it, suffix. It's been used for hundreds of years now, and it does its job. It doesn't sound pretty to me. I'm not sure to you, but it does the job well.
Yeah, you stick it on to an adjective?
Or noun.
And then it turns into, and to turn it into a verb. Yeah.
Yeah. For example, we have another word here quickly, polarization. Old or new?
Oh, polarization. That one's old.
Yes.
Yeah. We talked about that before, but it was like in the scientific world then, right?
Yeah,
right.
Fletcher, you remember it perfectly. Yes.
Because we talked about it when we were talking about political polarization.
Right.
Which didn't come till a little bit later.
Yeah, 1870s it began.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Interesting.
Very good, Fletcher. You have a lot of truthiness.
Oh. Okay. I remember truthiness. Now we remember that as the Colbert truthiness, which is something that seems to have the veneer of being true, but is actually completely false. But the word existed before, meaning something a little bit different. Right?
You're good.
Right?
You right? Got it, baby. It's true. It was truthiness was an alternate form of truthfulness. It was exactly what it purports to be at 1824. So we're only a year off of our 200 year.
Oh, wow.
I like the Colbert retort. He was told it was already a word when he had said it. And he said, you don't look up truthiness in a book. You look it up in your gut.
Yeah, that's very Colbert.
Yeah.
It is hard to think about that word just meaning truthfulness now.
Right.
Like truthiness is took such hold, you know, when he started to use it.
You could never use it. I think if I read it in an old book, I would be thrown a little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
really
so too.
It really would be. The next word is bodacious.
Okay. Now, this seems like a big trick. Obviously, we think of bodacious when we're thinking about, I don't know, surfer slang in the 1980s or something, which means it has to be like 200 years old or more even.
1837.
Oh, wow.
And it was Southern U.S. slang. I love this. They think it might have come from bodiaciously, meaning bodily, totally, bodiaciously. That's horrible.
Yeah, I know.
Or a blend of bold and audacious. I love the word bodacious.
I know. Kath uses it all the time.
I like saying it. It feels good in my mouth. Bodacious. You also want to talk like that when you're bodacious. Don't you?
You do. I agree.
Yeah.
So what did it mean in the 1830s?
It initially was spelled bowdit, B-O-W, bow. They had it meaning complete and thorough. Ere ye turned a bodacious idiot, skimp. I think that you have to write it, pronounce that differently. She's so bodacious, unreasonable when she's raised. Yeah. So she's so totally unreasonable. Totally.
Yeah, so it's changed then. That's interesting.
It has changed.
Interesting, yeah. Changed quite a
lot. Because now it's like, great, and then you also have the hotsy-totsy, ooh, that bodacious gal over there, which is a very different thing that we won't go into.
And you used to do that when we used to walk down 42nd Street. Remember that place?
I do, but we're not going to discuss that.
There was a big sign with bodacious in it, but we won't go there.
Yeah. It's distinct but not entirely separate from bootylicious.
Yeah, very bootylicious. It is. I think that you could be bodaciously bootylicious, don't you?
Absolutely,
think?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
but I don't think you could be bootylicious-ly bodacious.
I don't think that's ever been said in the history of the English language until today. Kathy, that's such a generic answer.
All right, so now we're looking at generic.
Right. This is an interesting one, actually.
Yeah, I'm starting to think it might be. I'll say that this is from 200 years ago, but I want to know about this.
Well, actually, Fletcher, you're wrong, but you're wrong in the right way. It's from the 1670s.
Oh, okay.
And this one, oddly enough, I was wrong in the wrong way. I would have guessed it was recent. And it's formed from the Latin genus or genera. I mean, it would be genus or genus in Latin, but race or kind. And it refers to something like of a general kind, of that sort of thing, with the ick part being the, you know, the suffix meaning of that kind of thing, not special, generic, plain.
Okay.
And the modern way of saying it with manufactured goods, like that's a generic brand, is only from the 50s. It's later.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think I really think of generic as the old 1600s version at all.
No, I don't think so either.
Okay, so if something was generic in the 1600s, it was referring to something of a certain type.
Yeah.
Yes.
From genera, correct?
Whereas now when we say generic, it's almost like it doesn't have a type. It's so nondescript.
Actually, very well said. That's right.
That's interesting. You're absolutely right. The bottom meaning has changed in our heads. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then we're both wrong, because it really means it's really modern in that sense, because we're really talking about of a type in a general way, which is kind of not great, not special.
Yeah, yeah. Of no type almost.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas generic would have been in the 1600s, it would have been of a group. Yeah.
Right. But you can kind of see how that meaning would have changed, because it wasn't super specific originally. It was of this larger group. And like over time, you can kind of see how that, even that, that larger group part melted away and it just became of every group. It's just like whatever. Yeah.
Okay, the next one, Fletcher, is a really interesting one. Person or people of color.
Oh, that is interesting. Okay, let's say that is 200-ish years old. I have some suspicions about why. Tell me, first of all, if I'm right, I guess.
You're right.
It's even older than that. I mean, they're saying American Heritage Guide to Contemporary Usage has people of color being used as that phrase going back as far as 1796.
Oh, wow.
He's still he's generally correct. Do you know, what's your theory about it though, Fletcher?
Well, I was thinking about abolition movements beginning to take form.
Ooh.
Sort of language changing, to adapt with those movements. But I don't know. I mean, it's you know, obviously a half-formed idea.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about it. Do you know?
Actually, it's kind of in line with the whole apartheid thing. No, Ross?
Yeah.
Because initially, it appears, I mean, you know, that it was used by French colonists. I can't pronounce French. Jean de couleur. Meaning people of color. And they were referring to people of mixed African and European heritage.
Oh.
Who were fleeing from slavery. And then in the South, it began being used to distinguish between black slaves and like the ones who were mixed race. I'm using all their terms.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, which reminds me of, I have a friend here who was from South Africa, and he was always talking about how horrible it was. He grew up, he's a white guy, but grew up during apartheid, and he said the list they had of the breakdown of like, this is a little too dark, this is like almost there, you know what I mean? And this really reminds me of it.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And then interestingly, after the Civil War, because that distinction wasn't that useful then for the white people who were basically using it, They used the term basically for all black Americans of any mixture. Then, interestingly enough, it kind of faded And then Martin Luther King used the term citizens of color in 1963, but it really caught on again. It re-caught on in the 1970s, which we, you know, obviously mm-hmm. well know now.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So it's a really interesting etymology there.
Yeah, I guess I was, as usual, giving humanity too much credit in thinking that
sadly,
that it came
yeah.
for positive reasons.
We're going to move along to a completely, as you know, this is jarring as anything, from person or people of color to dehydrate.
<I'm sorry>. Ross, I'm appalled that you didn't have a segue.
Dehydrate. Well, so the way we use it now, I'm going to guess that this usage, you know, came about in the, I don't know, mid 20th century. But I'm guessing that.
Why are we doing this to you, Fletcher?
You're cruel. And you have been for 200 episodes. But the word coming in, I'm going to guess, is 200 years old.
Very good. Dehydration. Mm-hmm. They have meaning removal of water from 1834. Dehydrate came from, they're saying, was used beginning in 1854.
Oh.
So we have the noun first and the transitive verb after.
Yeah.
But, and again, I mean, the general rule of thumb, I think, that we're doing here, and there are some exceptions, as usual in English, but a lot of the Latinate words, surprisingly yep. to us, came earlier than we would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we need to lose water over that, whatever that means.
That sounds very strange, Ross.
It does.
Although if it were dune or something. I'm going to give Fletcher three words. How about that?
Okay, good.
Which is, we'll give you three, two of which will be new, two of which will be 200 years old. One of which will not be. Two of these are from about 200 years old.
Okay.
The three words, freelance, snappy, and locavore.
That's a good one, Kath. I like that.
Oh, gosh, you're tricky. I mean, locavore seems ridiculously new, so that's probably old. And snappy seems like it's from like the 1920s. And so I'm going to go with freelance and locavore as being the actual 200-year-old words.
Well,
I must have gotten one of them right because you only gave me three.
You got one right. You got freelance right.
Okay. So locavore really is new.
Locavore is
yes.
new.
Yeah. Well,
you guess why freelance is old and how old and who made it up?
Freelance. A freelance, like a
yes!
dude just walking
good
around with a
lens. Oh, yeah.
And there's a certain writer who coined the word.
Keeps cropping up lately.
I know, he's cropping up a lot here.
Okay, so is that Sir Walter Scott?
You got
yes!
it. It means literally it's a medieval mercenary warrior, a free, you know, the lance mm-hmm. is free for mm-hmm. hire.
I must say, as a freelance writer for so many years, I knew it came from freelance, but I never knew it was, I assumed it came from like, you know, night times.
I thought so too. I agree.
And snappy is from 1825, exactly 200
wow.
years.
Exactly 200 years
yeah.
ago. Meaning
quick and energetic. Make
yeah.
it snappy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
A little bit different from when you call somebody a snappy dresser, though. I mean, I guess that could be, like, energetic.
That's from 1881, the snappy
okay.
dresser.
Yeah, it evolved to that very quickly, we might add.
Yeah.
They're saying it from 1881, but the one thing we're doing these is they could have been much earlier. It just could have finally made it into print then.
Yeah.
I would have thought snappy is for some reason, snappy to me has
1920s.
You got it. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. It feels 1920s to
which
me.
Is exactly what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
And locavore is just one of those words that I just hate and I don't like it.
You,
go
just,
away.
You just wanted to stick it in there so that you could tell us how much you hate it.
I know.
That's true. I use these to, I purge during these episodes.
Yeah, I guess this has also been 200 episodes of a little bit of therapy, hasn't it?
Yes.
So far, I've not gotten far though, have I? I don't know.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetris@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.